Welcome back, everybody, to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. I am hours away from stepping on a plane and heading to New York for New York Comic Con. If you're going, I hope you'll stop and say hello. If you see me milling about either in Artist Alley or on the main floor, but haven't been in New York in the last two New York sessions, and I'm really happy to get back. Looking forward to a couple press roundtables that I'll be sharing with you here on the Word Balloon podcast. No panels for me this year in New York. That's okay. It's gotten much tougher to have panels at New York. And it's kind of interesting. A bunch of us have been talking about that in the months leading up to New York this time. I had a couple good ideas, but they passed. And I understand they got a very busy schedule. So busy, there are even events happening at the Hammerstein Ballroom and at Madison Square Garden. So it's going to be a very interesting New York Comic Con this year as an observer, and I'll tell you about it when I get back, likely the next episode of Word Balloon you hear. But all that said, very excited about today's episode because Jeff Lemire is back. Man, is he on a roll. I am telling you, he was kind enough to show me a preview of AD, the wonderful book that he has coming out with Scott Snyder very soon from Image Comics. It looks and sounds amazing, and that first issue really blew me away. It was an expanded first issue. He's doing great work with Dark Horse on the Black Hammer. That's probably my favorite current Jeff Lemire book, and it's a great look at a former superhero team that seems to have disappeared but is still kind of lingering around their big city, and we get into their personal lives since their forced retirement. It's very funny. And a very interesting mystery that Jeff is laying out in the Black Hammer. We also talk about Royal City, Jeff's upcoming book. Man, this sounds like a really interesting, sprawling kind of epic story. And I'm really looking forward to that book. We talk a bit about his Marvel work like Moon Knight. I'm kicking myself, though, because literally after I did the interview, I'm in a comic book store and there's Old Man Logan. And I'm like, why didn't I talk to him about Old Man Logan? I love that book. You will probably love it, too. Tremendous book. Him and Sorrentino doing such beautiful work on that book. We do talk a little bit about Moon Knight. Jeff is making a big splash in the Valiant universe as well, doing Bloodshot. And actually has me reading Bloodshot because it's Jeff Lemire. Same thing with Matt Kent's books. You know, you got to hand it to Valiant, man. They got great writers and great artists. Our buddy Fred Van Lente is over there, Jen Van Meter. And I find myself reading more and more Valiant, which is fantastic. So it's great quality stuff. And shame on me for taking so long to really take notice. But now all my buds are over there writing and drawing this stuff. And I really want to take advantage of it. So, yeah, now I'm reading Bloodshot. And immediately when Jeff describes me his take on Bloodshot, I'm like, I'm in. Same thing with Ninjak. I'm in. Good stuff. So it's great. And also a very important project that Jeff is working on regarding some interesting issues that Canada is facing with its indigenous people and a part of its history that it's ignored for a very long time. And Jeff and the lead singer and founder of Tragically Hip have gotten together and worked on this very important project called Secret Path. And you can tell from the change in my the tone of my voice, this is really an important project, and I'm really glad that Jeff opened up about it because it's clearly close to his heart, and I think it's a really important issue, and it's going to make you want to learn a lot more about this, whether you're down here in the lower 48 or up in Canada as well. Secret Path, and it's a very important Canadian project. So I'm going to let Jeff talk about that and give you more details. But just a great conversation with Jeff. It's been far too long, and he's really one of the more thoughtful, I think, creators out there. And I'm always interested in his point of view. And it's great to catch up with Jeff Lemire on today's Word Balloon. It's brought to you by the League of Word Balloon listeners. Thank you very much, League, for your support. In fact, you are helping me as I board the plane and head over to New York and hopefully make some more new connections in Artist Alley and up on the main floor and provide you with some great new content for Word Balloon. And it's on the backs of the League of Word Balloon listeners because they subscribe to Word Balloon. You don't have to subscribe to Word Balloon, but it'd be great if you did through Patreon. If you go to wordballoon.com and look on the Patreon ad over there, it will take you to our Patreon homepage and a couple videos. And if you like what you hear here and you can afford a dollar or two to back the cause, that would be terrific. Word Balloon is free. It will always be free. But if you think what I provide is worthwhile and gives you some good lengthy entertainment each month, then you'd be helping me out with a subscription to Word Balloon. So thank you once again, League of Word Balloon listeners. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. And there are tremendous Jeff Lemire products waiting for you at InStock Trades, whether it's superhero stuff or his wonderful creator-owned stuff. Things like The Complete Essex County. Wow, what an amazing book. And, you know, Jeff's got it there at InStock Trades at 30% off, just $20.96. You can get volumes of Jeff's wonderful Vertigo run on Sweet Tooth. The first volume is 45% off, just $7.14. The rest are about $8.24. And another great thing, a great single book, The Nobody. Tremendous story from, again, a Vertigo DC publication. And that is 45% off, $8.24. You can get his run on Superboy, Smallville Attacks. The trade paperback is 45% off, $13.74. Of course, his wonderful run on Animal Man with Travel Foreman, other great artists. Volume 1, The Hunt, is 45% off, $8.24. There are other volumes of Animal Man as well. Justice League Dark, great run, funny stuff. Really brought, I think, a good spirit and energy to Justice League Dark. And we've got the new Justice League Dark animated feature coming up soon. But you can get Volume 2, The Books of Magic, from Jeff Lemire and Pete Milligan. And it is 45% off, $9.34. Any Marvel product? Let's look around here. I'm kind of bopping around, so we'll see if we got a little Marvel product. We've got The Valiant trade paperback, which is 30% off, just $6.99. Of course, Descender, his wonderful series with Dustin Nguyen, 45% off for Volume 1, $5.49, and lots more. So do yourself a favor. I did find a Marvel book. Hawkeye, of course. Him and Ramon Perez. 42% off for Volume 5 of All New Hawkeye. It's just $9.27. So there's a ton of product. I mean, I'm looking at six pages of Jeff Lemire works at InStockTrades.com. Do yourself a favor. Check it out for yourself. InStockTrades.com. All right, without further ado, very happy to welcome back Jeff Lemire. So let's get to this conversation now. Jeff Lemire joins us on Word Balloon. So I got Black Hammer, AD, Secret Path, Royal City, your Valiant stuff we can mention, and sure. You know, and briefly Marvel or whatever. Now, are you done with Moon Knight, or are you still on Moon Knight?
No, Moon Knight's still going, yeah. That's cool. Been going really well. We can talk about that. People Excellent. Are into that one.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Okay, good deal. Fantastic. Yeah. You know, I always got to catch up. Seriously, Black Hammer is, I love it, and we'll get into it. But Royal City and AD, you guys are at it again. I mean, AD, I know it's you and Scott, but Royal City too, man. You're insane in a good way. I love this shit. It's so bleak, but good.
Thank you.
Truly.
Bleak, but good. My gravestone's going to say that.
Oh, he God forbid. Bleak, but good. No, that's decades away. I'm leaving that in because it was an impromptu observation I had for Jeff Lemire. He's bleak but good, but always compelling. He's got a lot of creator-owned stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about some Marvel and Valiant stuff as well. But my God, it's just a stack of amazing creator-owned stuff right now. Welcome back to Word Balloon, Jeff Lemire.
Hey, thanks. It's been way too long, John. It's good to talk to you.
I know, and I apologize for that. I was saying that as we were just getting started.
It's my fault, too. I've been avoiding you. So.
I kind of think so sometimes. That's all right. How are things up north and everything, man? Of course you're a huge hockey fan. Gearing up for the season, obviously.
Yeah, well, the World Cup of hockey is happening right now in Toronto as I speak. So that's very exciting.
Okay.
And I've kind of got baseball fever now too with the Blue Jays. So I'm. There's lots going on here. That's sports wise cool. That have been good.
I have to admit. I was going to say, I have to admit, you know, I'm kind of detached since not working in sports radio anymore. And, actually, my guy who is the PA announcer for the Blackhawks, the great Harvey Wittenberg, was telling me that a lot of the guys are up playing in the World Cup and everything. And not,
Yes, there are many Blackhawks. which is yeah, it's good. Sports are kind of my my only escape from comics, so I kind of enjoy them when I can.
Understood. Well, you're, as I said, you've got a huge stack of amazing things going on right now, stuff that's coming up and stuff that's currently in process. Black Hammer from Dark Horse. Man, I love it. Thanks. Great. You're always great when it comes to doing traditional superhero stuff, but of course I love when you always put your bizarre twist on it. And this is an amazing nod to the Golden Age. And
that's been a project that's been percolating for years and years. I mean, it's kind of interesting because I came up with Black Hammer right after I finished Essex County. That was kind of going to be it was going to be my next thing after that I was going to draw myself way back in, I don't know, 2007 or whatever that was. And, but then, you know, things happened.
Sure.
Sweet Tooth happened instead, which was great. And
you bet.
Black Hammer kind of got shot to the side, but I kind of always loved the idea, you know, of these of exploring, you know, my love of superhero comics and the history of superhero comics. But, you know, through that same kind of lens that I did Essex County and stuff, you know, small town family life and stuff. And long story short, I never stopped thinking about the book. And then when it became obvious I couldn't draw it myself because I was already drawing other things. And once I started doing Descender with Dustin, that kind of opened the door for me to realize it's okay to do creator own books that I didn't necessarily draw myself as well. So then I contacted, I had met Dean Ormston, the artist, in the UK a few years ago at a convention. Okay. And I was just a fan. I was a fan of his because he had done this book for Vertigo that I love called, Books of Magic War During Lifetime, or some life during wartime. It was like I think it ran for like about 15 or 20 issues. It was kind of like an early 2000 sort of reboot of the Books of Magic stuff with mm-hmm. Timothy Hunter. But Dean had drawn that, and I thought it was just incredible and a really underrated comic at the time. So I was a big fan of his. I met Dean at that show, and we talked, and he's a great guy, and we kind of talked about doing stuff. I think for a while, there was some talk of Dean doing a couple issues of Animal Man. I guess I just started doing Animal Man back then.
Okay.
When I met him. But we stayed in touch, and then I'm rambling, but the point is, I asked Dean if he wanted to do Black Hammer, and here we are. So,
well, his style seems to, you know, kind of be close to your style. You know what I mean? I mean, I kind of feel like it a little bit.
It really works. I mean, I think, I don't know, it's hard to say if it's close, but it's definitely, like me, it's not your traditional, you know, really sleek mainstream superhero kind of style.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
And I knew whoever did this book, if it wasn't going to be me, it needed to be someone who, when they drew superheroes, they didn't look like any other superheroes you'd ever seen. You
sure.
know, they didn't look like, because it could very easily kind of just become the thing I was commenting on. You know, if you had like, you know, Jim Lee or Ivan Reese or one of these guys who I love, but if you had them drawing Black Hammer, it would just become a mainstream superhero comic. It wouldn't become, you know, it needed to be something left of center. So Dean certainly brings that kind of horror element to it. The really kind of skewed vision that really works, I think, with what we're doing. But yeah, you know, I think when I started the book way back when, I had never written any actual superhero books professionally, you know, and this was sort of more my love letter to all that stuff that I loved growing up, you know, all the DC stuff when I was a kid. And then now doing it years later, where I have written all kinds of stuff for DC and stuff, it really brings a different perspective to it. So I kind of, it's been a really unique project in that it sort of encompasses my whole career in a weird way, you know. So
sure,
I'm very, very proud of it. I think it's definitely one of the best things I've ever done, and it's so nice to see people responding the way they have. It seems to really be finding an audience. That's always exciting, you know, for creator own stuff. To you kind of get the sense that you're going to be able to stick around and tell the story you want to tell.
Well, it's recognizable tropes, but obviously you're putting your own twist on them, and in some cases a very horrific twist. But has your work at DC or Marvel influenced a specific look at any of the characters that you have in Black Hammer?
Not really, because I developed all those characters well before I had worked on that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was more, like I said, it was more the stuff I loved as a kid, you know, growing up.
Sure.
I mean, it's pretty obvious. You can see these characters in Black Hammer are, some of them are pretty clear analogs for, you know, for certain DC characters and stuff. But I wouldn't say the characters have been informed by the work I've done at Marvel and DC, but I think now the story, the path the story takes has really evolved and changed. And I don't want to spoil things, obviously, but as we get into the second and third arc of Black Hammer, you'll really see kind of a meta commentary on superhero comics in general. And so, not necessarily that I know to criticize them or whatever, but it's just, you know, it's kind of fun to take a step back and look at the industry and where superhero comics are at and kind of be able to comment on them from the outside instead of just being stuck in it when I'm, you know, like I am at Marvel or DC.
Sure. No, definitely. Now, and forgive me, I don't have the Black Hammer comics in front of me. What's the girl's name? Is it Golden Girl?
Golden Gale.
Golden Gale. Thank you. Okay, great.
Yes.
I mean, that's tremendous. And for people, I won't go into detail for people who maybe haven't started picking it up, but are you on the third issue or the fourth issue?
Third comes out tomorrow as we're speaking.
It'll come great
out tomorrow. Yeah. And I've written 18 scripts already. So I'm way ahead of Dean. And so I kind of know where everything's kind of going, and it's given me the benefit of going back and kind of reworking earlier scripts based on stuff I figured out later on and stuff like that. So it's been, it's really nice to be able to work so far ahead. But yeah, Golden Gale's kind of seems to be the fan favorite already. So she's this 60-year-old woman stuck in the body of a 9-year-old girl, and which sounds like it would be great, but when you're stuck there and you can't change back, and you know, you have all these sort of thoughts and impulses and desires of an adult woman, but you can't act on them as a child. It's kind of horrific and almost like this prison, you know?
Sure.
So it's a real twist on the whole magic word Shazam kind of thing.
Oh God, I loved her origin, which, you know, is you know, that was fantastic. And yeah, the poor little thing stuck in the girls' room. It you can only imagine. I mean, God, even at my age, thinking if you were stuck in middle school at that, you know, with that brain and that kind of tedium and everything, and smoking and just kind of muttering her magic word, hoping to finally change back, and it's just not happening.
And just cursing a blue streak. Yeah, she's pretty great.
It was a great scene with the principal and everything too, and her grandfather, in air quotes, obviously another team member.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, run through the, because Barbalian, is that?
Yes, Barbalian.
Yes,
He's very much like a Martian Manhunter kind of gem son of Saturn, sort of, you know, this sort of super alien barbarian character stuck on Earth. And the third issue really delves into his origin and you kind of figure out some of his little personality quirks. What else we got? Abraham Slam is sort of the golden age, you know, traditional, the original mass crime buster, you know, from the golden age, and who's not really super powered, but he's really very much the father figure, or the, I guess, grandfather figure now of this weird little surrogate family. And who else do we get? Colonel Weird is, you know, Adam Strange. That one's I was pretty clear. It's sort of like Adam Strange or you know, David Bowman from 2001 Space Odyssey, you know.
Sure.
When after they've made contact and it's completely fried their brain and
then
open their consciousness to things beyond this world. And so it's sort of, he's sort of this very tragic character as well. But, and then what else do we have? We have, Madame Dragonfly is kind of my, I don't know, you know, Madame Xanadu, Abby Arcane, kind of 70s, 80s House of Mystery horror kind of character.
Sure.
And she's very, obviously very mysterious. So I'm not going to talk about her because she's, her stuff kind of comes in a little bit later in like issue 6-7 and starts to really, inform some of the mystery of the book. But, and then, Black Hammer himself, sort of the, who the book's named after, was the sixth hero who's no longer on the farm and with the others, and sort of the story of what happened to him and why he's not there. Well, again, also that's something that's coming as well.
Sure.
His daughter Lucy is a key player in the book. She's sort of still stuck in the real world, or the world that they were wiped out of, and she's looking for her father and his friends. So
yeah, she's kind of the Lois Lane or whatever of the
yeah, of she's the Lois Lane. And then she becomes something totally different, but I'm not gonna
get
into that. But she becomes a pretty big player as the book moves forward.
Okay, very cool. And you know, forgive me, because honestly, I keep asking this of the creator-owned people now. So it's an ongoing, but it is a finite series. Do you have it mapped out of where you want it to go?
Yeah, well, I've written 18 issues, and as of now, that's the end of the series.
Okay.
But it's already kind of become one of those things, like with Sweet Tooth or other things that I've done, where I'm already seeing now ways that it could kind of continue or spin off into slightly different directions and maybe last a bit longer. So the benefit of working so far ahead of now is I can kind of look at what I have and sort of let it grow where it wants to grow without forcing it. So I guess the short answer is it's probably at least 20 issues, and then, you know, I'm kind of in love with the world and the characters, so I wouldn't be surprised if it just keeps growing into something bigger.
Okay. Because I just talked to Azzarello and Riso and Dave Johnson, the 100 Bullets team in Cincinnati. And, you know, I mean, honestly, I keep having this conversation with people like Nick Spencer, and you're a good guy to do this too, because, you know, you've had your Vertigo series as well as your full creator-owned like Image stuff. And it's just, it's a different environment now. It's even a different environment of what it was when Sweet Tooth was happening.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when Sweet Tooth started, I thought I'd be lucky to get 7 or 8 issues before it was canceled, you know? And whereas now you kind of, for the most part, you control your own destiny with Image, where, you know, you're paying for it yourself. And as long as the book's making a profit, you can, in theory, keep it going as long as you want or as short as you want. And the great thing about that is now you can just let the story dictate the length, you know? So you can make every project kind of tailored to whatever it wants to be. You don't have to follow any set model, you know? Like, the thing I'm doing with Snyder is it just wanted to be a finite thing, so that's going to be like a three oversized issues. And Descender is one of those books that, you know, it might go for 60, 70 issues, you know, if it keeps doing well. So,
okay,
you know, you just kind of let each project be what it wants to be and be true to itself, which is a very freeing and very creatively a wonderful, wonderful kind of era we live in with the success of creator-owned books. You know, I'm certainly very lucky.
Before we get to AD, let me ask you about Descender. Is it still going every 5 issues, then take a break, and then 5 more issues?
We only take 1 month off, so it's just to let Dustin kind of catch up a bit. But
sure.
Yeah, so we're not taking big hiatuses like I know some of the other books take a number of months off between arcs, but we just take 1 month. It's an ongoing, and Dustin's just finishing the third arc, and I've written the fourth, so I try to stay one arc ahead of him. So I've written, you know, I'm on issue 22 or something, and I have the thing plotted out now to be it's getting closer to 50 issues all the time, and it started off as 30. So,
interesting.
You know, it just kind of just grows and grows. But that it's such an easy collaboration with Dustin, and we're having so much fun. And I guess as long as we still love the world and the characters, and as long as the story still feels like it's not just extending itself for the sake of extending itself, we'll keep it going. But yeah, so that's it's a big story with a big canvas, you know, so that's one where I feel like it could be, you know, a 60, 70 issue thing.
And it's
fun.
Dustin's still, you know, I mean, Dustin's still engaged and is loving it. And, you know, and also more importantly, I mean, like you said before, the core audience is there, so you can, you know, handle, whoops. Hang on. God damn it. Sorry about
Hello?
That.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry about
sorry,
that.
Sorry, someone rang my phone. And
oh, no problem, off. Man. Sorry. No worries.
Yeah, I was saying Dustin's still, he's still engaged as far as I can tell.
Okay.
I try not to talk to him as much as I can because he's a very difficult personality, but no, I'm just kidding.
I know you're kidding. Absolutely, yeah.
He's the best. He's literally. It's like, I swear, it's the easiest collaboration I've ever had with anyone. It's like we share a brain. We don't even talk. which sounds bad, but it's like a good thing where he just, you know, we just totally get each other. And I don't know. It just seems like we were meant to work together for a long, long time. So we've even talked, you know, after Descender, whenever that is, just keeping it going with the new projects, the way that
Oh, that's great.
You know, Brubaker and Phillips have kind of become this you know, tandem that just keeps doing creator own books, you know, and creating this brand that's all their own kind of thing, you know. And I that's feel like cool. Dustin and I could do that, you know. I already have a couple ideas of what we would do next. So,
would you switch gears and go to a different genre, or would you stay in sci-fi? There,
yeah, no, I think we'd switch gears. I think this will be our sci-fi book, at least for now, until we, and, you know, the next one will be. I won't spoil it, but this stuff sure. I'm talking about to do with him will be a few years off anyway. But it wouldn't be. I don't think we'd do sci-fi right away. We'd do something different, and then, you know, can maybe come back to sci-fi again or whatever. But yeah.
That's cool. What kind of back matter do you have in Descender?
We do not.
Okay.
No, you know, I know fans love that stuff, and I wish I had more time to do it. But the truth is, like, I got like 5 Marvel books,
yeah,
4 creator-owned books, and then I'm drawing 2 books. It's like something has to give. I just I don't have time to do back matter, but I will with. Not to jump ahead in our conversation, but I will be having all kinds of back matter in my next Image book, Royal City.
Royal City, doing, excellent. So. Yeah. Well, and you know, yes, you've allowed me to sample AD and Royal City, so I want, you know,
yeah.
I kind of figured that was going to be the main stuff we're going to talk about. So that's
yeah.
That's
well,
great.
Before we jump ahead, just please. On Descender on the back matter thing, I should say that Dustin is like a fiend for. In addition to doing his work, which he always gets done on time miraculously, he also just sketches nonstop, and he has so many Descender-related doodles, sketches, design things that he just does on the side for fun. That one day, whenever we do the deluxe hardcover, it's going to be amazing to finally bring all this stuff together. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff. It just maybe we should start putting it in the monthlies. But like I said, we just. I tried to do a letter column for a while, and even that, just I didn't have time. And then
I
you
hear
feel
you,
bad because you're, you know,
yeah.
So I guess you could focus on getting the comics out on time, and that's got to stay the priority. And then if I have time for the other stuff, you know.
Well, like you said, no, that's cool. Like saving it for the hardcover. I, you know, there's a good argument for that versus putting in the monthly sometimes. You know, so that you know, I like it. That's great, man. And no, gorgeous book and a wonderful sci-fi story. I mean, Jesus, you know, it's
yeah. Dustin's amazing.
Good timing too, man. You know, with shit like Ex Machina and stuff like that. You know,
yeah. Dustin, he's so great. You know, it's so fun to see his artwork come back every month. And yeah, he's awesome.
That's excellent.
I could talk about him all day. Yeah.
No, I hear you. Well, and I kind of figure we only got to find out. Period of time here, so usually like you and Wade, it's like always like an hour, so I feel like all right, let's keep it moving. But tell me about in order of what's coming up as far as your creator own stuff,
sure.
is Royal City going to come out before AD?
No, AD will start in November.
Okay.
It's 3 months, 3 issues, and then Royal City will be March, so they'll kind of one after another. Yeah.
Oh man, you gave me a nice preview on Royal City. If it's still 6 months away, that's great.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I like to be really far ahead on things. So I'm
well.
I got the first issue of that done, the second issue done, and then I kind of had to put it aside to work on to finish up AD. So it was kind of good that I started so early. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about AD because like you said, so it's coming up in November. It's you and Scott Snyder.
Yeah.
Now, because really, I mean, you gave it to me, and it's 60 pages, and it looks great. I love the fact that you're both doing prose and comics in terms of its storytelling. Tell me about the decision to go that route.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole project has had a weird evolution in that, you know, I think originally Scott had mentioned it to me. This might have been 2012, 2013. We were just, he had this idea for this story that became AD, and he had mentioned it to me over coffee. I think we were at a DC summit or something at the time in New York. And I just really fell in love with the idea. As soon as he kind of told it to me, I could see it, you know? And I said, oh man, I'd love to draw that every time or whatever. And at the time, I think it was just going to be a short story that he was going to do like 20 pages or something, you know? And, so we said, yeah, let's do it sometime or whatever. We'll do it as like a one shot or something. And so we kind of just left it at that. And then we, you know, a year later, whenever we finally sat down to figure out what it would be and when it would be, the story kind of just kept growing and growing. And so then it became an original graphic novel that we were going to do. It would be like 150 pages. And that's what we announced originally, I think, with Image, was just we were gonna go straight to graphic novel hardcover, and then again, so we started working on that, and it just kind of grew and grew. So we it got to the point where we realized you could either wait and put it out as like a 250-page graphic novel or whatever, or we could maybe split it up into books, because the story itself kind of seemed to have natural breakpoints, like three sections. So so we decided to do what we're doing now, which is three, you know, 70, 80 page volumes. It'll be oversized, kind of prestige format, you know, nice card covers and stuff. And then eventually we'll obviously collect it. But for now, so we're serializing it and starting November. And I guess to get to your question about the prose, that just kind of came out of the story too. You know, originally it was just going to be comics, but I know Scott's been kind of itching to get back doing some prose, because I'm not sure how much you know about his sort of story, his history, but Scott started off doing prose. You know, he did short story collection first, and that's kind of the world he came from, the literary world, and then got involved in comics. And I knew he'd been itching to kind of get back to that in some form, you know, and this kind of seemed like the project, the more we talked about it, that we could do whatever we wanted. You know, we weren't limited to the 22 page monthly comic format where you had to have, you know, a cliffhanger and, you know, all the tropes that you need to do with a usual series. We kind of had the freedom to just experiment, and Scott had never really done a graphic novel or done a project like this outside of that format. So I think he just embraced it and proposed the idea of kind of doing a mixture of him doing prose, and I would do these spot illustrations and the prose, and then mixing that with traditional comics and kind of trying to create something just new and different for both of us. So it just sort of evolved out of us trying to experiment and play with format and just do something different than what we'd done in the past and what we're doing now, you know?
Absolutely. I think it's very helpful, actually, that the hero's inner monologue is represented in this prose, because you do kind of get inside his mind, and also your illustrations of those cassette tapes and everything, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm from that beginning of that, unfortunately, cassette generation. So there is something about, you know, a mixtape and that kind of stuff versus even CDs. There really is a difference, and I kind of miss that, and it really does work for this kind of, like I said, inner monologue narrative.
Yeah, the story, I mean, I don't want to spoil any of this, the mysteries of the book, but the story itself is about, you know, it's a futuristic setting where there's been a genetic cure for death, and there's a society of people living, you know, hundreds of years afterwards. And our main character, Jonah Cook, is one of these people, and he's kind of instrumental in helping this cure, helping discover this cure and facilitate it. And so it picks up with him hundreds of years in the future after they've undergone this procedure. And so where the comic sections are set in this world, in the present or in the future world, and then the prose sections that Scott's writing are sort of him looking back on his past, you know, and his own personal history, and, mm-hmm. and connecting his past to the future. And so, yeah, so, you know, just using those two different formats to play with memory versus, you know, this future world and kind of nostalgia versus futurism, and, you know, a lot of fun thematic stuff we're playing with, mortality versus memory. And it's been a really crazy project to work on, you know, because Scott's a great writer, and I've never done something so big that I haven't written myself, that I've drawn. So it's been I was a little scared at first, you know, if I could do it, and but it's been fun to work with Scott. You know, we're such good friends, and
yeah,
we talk all the time and anyway about everything, and then to be able to now I talk about something every week, every day, that we're both kind of sharing in together and creating together, has been really rewarding.
No, it's very ambitious, and I will be interested to hear what a lot of the comics reading community says, because I have no problem with prose. I think it's great, and I do love when it's combined. The Immamans last year or 2 years ago had a great book that they worked on that was part prose and part comics.
And, oh, yeah. I, Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, but I know some people are like, you know, if I wanted to read a book, I would have bought a book. Thanks. You know, but it's, you know.
Who was that? Who was that that said that? Whose voice?
I have a specific podcaster
in mind. It sounded like Matt Kent to me.
That's hilarious. I don't know. Matt doesn't sound anything like that. That's fantastic.
I know. I like that. Chance I can get to insult Matt, I take insult.
Well, I'm going to bring up Valiant later, and you're both doing interesting work over at Valiant. So, but in the meantime, no, seriously, man, great, amazing first issue. I really enjoyed it. And you know, and yeah, I knew about Scott's background. I'm glad you explained it though, because it, I think it's both of you at your strengths. And like, so yeah. So in this collaboration, are you? Oh, forgive me. Go ahead and say, make a statement if you want to. But
I think it probably is going to answer your next question. I was just going to say it's interesting that, you know, if you look at stuff Scott and I do, the other stuff we do, as good of friends as we are, I think our stuff's actually quite different in that Scott uses a lot of narration, and a lot of, you know, he really embraces the fact that he's such a great writer and with his stuff, whereas my stuff tends to be a lot more sparse and quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't use as much internal monologue with my stuff. And so if you look at the book, you can kind of see that, you know, you have the prose stuff and then you have the comic stuff, which tends to be, for the most part, the comic sections are quite sparse and silent. And there's lots of silent panels and pages and stuff, and there's no interior monologue in those, so you kind of really do see both of our styles blending in a, you know, it's kind of the best of what we both do kind of together. It's
absolutely,
it's pretty proud of it. Yeah,
no man, it's like two musicians kind of jamming and you know, coming up with a, you know, where you can see the influences of both guys, but you or women, and you feel the collaboration becomes something of its own. And it's okay, because You're especially showing this world, you know, it requires you to really kind of take in the world building that you're doing on the page. And it also, you know, it's still kind of a mystery of what this world represents. So I think that kind of works. And, it, you know, again, you're getting into Jonas's mind and then seeing the new, you know, and appreciating where he came from as he makes this journey to the world he currently exists in. So it's, I think it works.
Thanks, John. Yeah, we're pretty proud of it. I think it's going to be something, if nothing else, you know, be something really different.
Yes, so, very distinct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the hard thing to do right now, because I think this is a really great time where you guys can make your bones in the mainstream. And you always, you know, I mean, you had already started, you know, with things like Essex County and stuff, and you were already gathering your audience before you really went to DC and Marvel and stuff. But now it really is with, I think, both of your successes, you really can go into and stretch into different directions and see what the audience thinks of it.
Yeah, I mean, if there was ever a time for us to experiment, it's probably now, just because we have such a safety net, and that we're doing so much other stuff too that's well received, that, you know, if this falls flat, we'll be okay. You know, but yeah, it's you know, and I think we're going to talk about Royal City, but yes, just kind of what you said kind of echoes my sentiments on that, where I wanted to do another ongoing book like Sweet Tooth that I wrote and drew myself. But I thought if there was ever a chance for me to get back to doing the kind of stuff I did in Essex County and Underwater Welder that maybe wasn't so genre based and high concept driven, this would be the time to experiment with that as well. You know, so I think that's part of why I kind of, instead of doing another sci-fi book like Sweet Tooth or something, I kind of went back to doing slightly more grounded stories with Royal City, just because, again, if there was ever a time for me to try something like that and experiment, this was probably it. So
that's excellent. Now let's get into Royal City, because it's got almost a soap opera feel to it, because it is kind of focusing on this town and this family. And it really did feel like, I mean, what I know from listening to even like old time radio, where it's like, this is the city. The city's, you know, based on this one manufacturing kind of company and everything. And everyone gets their livelihood from the city. And, you know, this is kind of I would assume almost like, you know, the cautionary tale of a lot of what Rust Belt state, you know, cities in the United States. And I imagine Canada suffers the same thing, where it was like kind of a factory based community that now is on the downside, and what happens to that, you know, when when the business dries up and what everybody relied on, you know, can't sustain a community's income anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of it is the same here as in the,
sure.
Many places in the States, I'm sure, where, yeah, like the, you know, these whole economies, these whole cities built around industry and manufacturing and stuff in the 50s or whatever,
sure.
Now are just sort of dying, you know, and,
yeah.
And you know, the cities themselves are dying, the people are moving away from them, moving to cities. And so, yeah, Royal City is very much that kind of a place that its best days are behind it, you know, and it's kind of in its death throes. And it so the city itself is sort of the setting and the character, but we focus in on one family who's also kind of been split apart and falling apart, and which is obviously something I like to explore in a lot of my stuff. And you know, it's really the story of this one family in this town, and sort of the one thing that binds them together was the death of their youngest sibling back in the 90s when he was 14. And that kind of continues to haunt everyone in the family in different ways.
Yeah, I think it's very, you know, I mean, the way that the first issue ends and stuff. Yeah, it's, I mean, clear that they are all, I mean, it's a dysfunctional family that is, you know, dealing with, you know, fathers on death's door. And, you know, am I right? Is it the oldest sister, she's kind of running the company right now, right?
Yeah, well, like, are
those two different characters? I was wondering, as the business is, or I should say the land around the business is potentially for sale and everything, you know.
Yeah, she's kind of taken over.
Okay.
Trying to develop the town and the city into something new. And you know, I guess I'll get into the characters. So that's Tara. She's sort of the oldest sibling. And
yeah, did you not want to? I'll stop you, Jeff, if you don't want to spoil it. It's okay.
No, I'm totally into it. Yeah, okay. And yeah, she's sort of the most responsible of the of the siblings now. She stayed in Royal City and lived her whole life there, and still, you know, very active in her parents' lives and things like that. Whereas the other two brothers are kind of both black sheep in different ways.
Richie,
you know, one character is, yeah, Richie is the real black sheep. He works at the factory and he's just a total fuck up. And,
yes,
you know, whenever there's a decision to make, he always makes the wrong decision and he's self-destructive. And he's clearly haunted by the death in the most immediate sense, you know. So he's very much the opposite of Tara. And then the third sibling, third adult sibling, is kind of my. I kind of describe him as my opposite doppelganger. You know, he's me if I made all the wrong choices in life. You know, he's a guy who left Royal City when he was, you know, 18, 19 and went to school, and he wanted to be a writer. And, you know, he had one really successful novel that kind of put him on the literary map and made him a star. And his follow-up novel was a real bomb. And he's just been struggling since then to kind of live up to the promise of that debut novel. And so he's kind of this returns to the town sort of as this failure. And as the reason he comes back, the sort of the opening catalyst of the whole series is that their father has a stroke. So they all kind of gather together around him. And as they gather together, they're kind of forced to face all the decisions they've made and all the things they've done to hurt one another. And that's kind of the first arc, kind of where we start, and from okay. There it kind of goes off into a whole bunch of directions.
Are you going to go into some kind of supernatural or anything, or is it a very grounded story?
That's a tough question to answer. It's
okay.
I think if you've read Essex County or Wilder, you kind of know that I like to do, I guess the term is like magical realism, where, you know, there are fantastic things happening, but they're not always treated as supernatural. You know, they're just kind of part of the fabric of the town, and people just sort of take them as just part of their daily lives, you know. So it's not overtly supernatural, but there are definitely fantastic things occurring all the time.
Yeah, heightened reality.
Makes any sense.
Yeah, oh, I get it,
yeah,
man.
You know,
I mean,
almost poetic ways, yes, of using visuals and sort of surreal elements to kind of I guess illustrate the inner workings of the characters, and you know, like I did with Waller and Essex. Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're all haunted by you know, our families and the ghosts that, you know, I mean, that represent the people that were part of our lives that have gone on, but their influence kind of hangs over us and everything. And so, yeah, it is kind of heightened reality. And I suspect it as much. Go ahead.
Yeah, the youngest brother, Tommy, who died when he was 14. He, I don't want to spoil the first issue. You've read it, but
yeah
he very much, even though he's been dead for 20 some years, he's still very much a character in the book. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah. No, it's very, it's great, man. Honestly, that's why I was bleak, but compelling. And it truly is, man. No, it's great. You know how to write characters, and that's the great thing, man. And I think you brought that into a lot of your superhero work as well, that you brought this touches of realism in these characters. So,
yeah. And, you know, like I said, there's so many great creator owned books coming out now and so much stuff that I love reading. But it's nice to try to do a book like this. That's an ongoing series that doesn't really have that kind of genre hook or high concept sort of hook to it. It's just more, it is a bit more grounded and more character driven, you know, and I think in a lot of ways, it's probably the closest thing I've done to Essex County since then, but just sort of as an ongoing series. And that really compelled me, the chance to kind of create this setting and these characters the way I did with Essex, but then be able to explore them on a ongoing basis, you know, for as long as I wanted. You know, the way that, if you look at what Jaime, the Hernandez brothers did, or especially Jaime with Maggie and Hopi, you know, you follow these characters from over the course of 30 years and you kind of see them age and grow and change. And that's such an amazing experience to be able to read that stuff. And I'm not saying I can do that, but just to be able to possibly follow this family in this town, you know, throughout my career now and explore different things, as you know, in my own life through them and stuff, was really compelling to me. So I'm pretty excited about the book.
That's terrific, man. And I mean, do you see it as something that will have an irregular schedule because of that, or how do you see it?
No, for now at least it'll be ongoing. I know that the first sort of big story that I'm telling here will be about 24 issues, and then it might be a thing where I take a break and do something else and then come back to it, you know, in another 5 years when I have something else to say with the characters, something like that.
Wow.
But for at least the first thing will be at least 20-30 issues, and then we'll kind of see where I'm at there, because there are other things I want to do as well. So it could be a thing like Brew Baker and those guys tend to do with Criminal, where they did the, you know, a huge run of Criminal, and then they kind of stopped and are doing their other little sort of shorter series, but then they'll come back to Criminal every few years, you know. And
sure,
it could almost be like that with Royal City for me.
That's really cool, man. No, I think that's great. And as you say, it really is for Essex, you know, County fans and stuff like that. It does feel like that return to that vibe, that sensibility.
Yeah, it was good. You know, that was, you know, 10 years ago that I did Essex, and
wow,
I've done so much stuff, I know, since then, and all the DC Marvel stuff and everything else. It's nice to go back to that, you know, and kind of return to your roots, you know, and have that world to escape into. It kind of helps keep me fresh, and then it helps keep the superhero stuff fresh too, because I kind of have a break from it once in a while.
Excellent. I want to talk about another collaboration you're doing, and that Secret Path, because my God, you know, I am, we're all knuckleheads down here in the lower 48, Jeff. You'll have to forgive us.
Well, I'm well aware.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you are. Most Canadians are.
I need only
are.
Look at your two presidential candidates.
Hey, I'm not that impressed with Skippy running things up there either. I got to be honest. Is he good? How's he doing? How is Justin doing, Mr.
Photo.
Trudeau? Right?
I don't know. Time will tell. Time will tell. We'll see if he seems to have his heart in the right spot, but well, you know, he's still pretty new.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Trudeau, right? Justin Trudeau, isn't that his name?
Yeah.
See, that's pretty good for a 48th, you know, for a lower 48th.
That was pretty good. Pretty good.
Well, because, you know, this Secret Path is really based on a very sad chapter in Canadian history that I had no idea about, and I'll let you kind of tell the story.
Well, I guess I'm glad you said that, because that's the whole point of the project, you know.
Yeah.
And I had to forgive me. I had agreed as part of this whole process of this project not to do a lot of press for this book for various reasons. But I think it's cool if we talk a little bit about it here.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
So the Secret Path is it's a collaboration this will be, let me try to explain it as best I can. So there's this band in Canada called the Tragically Hip, who are, you know, for Canadians, they're about as big as a rock band could ever be. They're huge here.
We have a lot of Chicago fans of the Tragically Hip.
They do actually have a lot of Chicago fans.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They never broke huge in the U.S., but they're massive here, you know. So anyways, that's just a bit of backstory. The lead singer of the band, Gord Downie, contacted me 3 years ago, I guess it was pretty much now. He had been a fan of Essex County, and he brought this story to me. It's the true story of this young Ojibwe boy, Canada, in the 1960s, who was part of this, what we call the 60s scoop, which was the church kind of opened up these residential schools where they would go and scoop up and take indigenous native children away from their families, bring them to these schools and kind of indoctrinate them in Christianity and kind of, as they would say, beat the savage out of them. Wow. You know, they would try to, it was a horrendous, horrible part of our history.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands, a huge percentage of these children were sexually abused by the priests and physically abused, emotionally abused. It's a horrible part of our history that not enough people know about now. And it went on well into the 70s and 80s. And it's an unbelievable tragedy and a horrible story. Anyway, this one particular story is about a child named Charlie Wenjack, who was taken from his family in the 60s to one of these schools. And he ran away, as many of these children tried to run away. But he ran away and tried to walk home, not really realizing how far he was from his home and kind of not really fully understanding his whole situation, I guess. And so he tried to walk the train tracks north back to his parents, his where he grew up. And he froze and died on the way. And the school covered it up for a while. And this is just one of tens of thousands of similar stories in, you know, Canadian history. And so Gord brought this story to me, and he had written an album of 10 songs kind of based on the story of Charlie Wenjack. And he shared those with me, and what he really wanted was for me to create a graphic novel based on his songs, and with the idea being that we would release them together at some point, and even try to get some kind of an animated film made, just to raise awareness, you know, to this issue. Because like you said, even me growing up here in Canada in our schools, we didn't learn about any of this. You know, this is such a huge part of our history. And, you know, why didn't we learn about this, you know? So if two, you know, high profile Canadian artists like Gordon and I can do a project like this and raise awareness, and this is something that it can be used to teach kids in school more about what happened and everything. So that was the whole point of this project that Gord and I set out on. And, you know, I've been working on it for 2.5-3 years with Gord, and yeah, it's going to come out in October now. And the CBC, our kind of Canadian television network, is producing an animated film where they're literally taking my drawings from the book and animating them.
Wow.
Into an hour long film that will, so it'll be like my drawings moving with his music, basically. And it's going to be on primetime television here. And Gord's going to do two shows in October, perform the songs with the animation playing behind him. And obviously something I'm extremely proud of, to be a part of this whole project. And it's been gratifying and emotional and in a lot of different ways. I know another part of this whole story is that you have to excuse me, John, I might get a little emotional here, but back last year, Gord was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer as well. So that's something that's kind of happened in the process of this, creating this book. And he and I, you know, come pretty close. So it's been a real journey doing this book. And October it'll be the 50th anniversary of Charlie's death. And, you know, we talk so much about all the superhero stuff I'm doing and everything, sure, but to do something like this is so important.
Absolutely.
To me and maybe to a lot of other people. It just shows, you know, the power of comics and why I love what I do. So
I hear you, man. Yeah.
Anyways, it's something real special to be a part of. And
dude, they got the right guy. I mean, that's the thing. And I'm really glad that you're able to really make people aware of this and that you and Gord found each other. And, God, I didn't know that he was, you know, had brain cancer either. Jesus, that's
yeah, he's that's an amazing harsh, person. He's, you know, just to spend his energy that he has left to do this project and see it through is really special. And to perform, it's going to be great. It's going to be a beautiful night for sure in October when he performs.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I'm sure you will be, you know, on social media telling people when they can watch it and stuff and as it's happening. But, yeah, you know, I understand, Jeff, and that's again, man. They got the right guy. I think this is terrific. I you guys are really doing a wonderful thing to, you know, hit this very tough subject and let people know about it and get the word out. God, what an incredible project and truly, I think that's amazing, and I'm glad that you guys were able to do it and get it done. And
Should say one thing I forgot to mention: is all profits from this project, from the book, the album, the film, every cent that comes in is donated to an Aboriginal charity here as well. So it's not fantastic. Something we're profiting from.
Oh, sure.
So anyone who is listening to this, and it would be great, even if you're mildly interested in the subject or in my work, you should order it because it's for a good cause for sure.
Absolutely.
And the money will go somewhere good.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific, man. Seriously. I'm fans of both of you guys. So, you got one customer, and I have a feeling a lot of other Word Balloon listeners are going to jump on this. And
yeah, you should check it out. The music alone is pretty special. It's it was great. You know, and creatively, it was very interesting for me to, you know, you're so used to, I'm so story focused, and when I'm writing for other artists or drawing my own stuff, even, you know, so plot driven, story focused, character driven, but to have this project where it was, I was sort of, you know, I just had the music as my script basically, and music is so abstract in a lot of ways. The lyrics and the music and stuff is poetry, really. You know, it's not a story, it's not a script. It's so it kind of really opened me up creatively, adapting these more abstract kind of thoughts and words and stuff, and try to make a narrative out of those. Kind of pushed me in some really interesting directions that I'm sure I'll use on everything I do now. So, you know, it's pretty rewarding in that way too.
That's amazing. So is everything coming out in October, the album and everything?
Yeah, the album and book come packaged together.
Great.
And they'll be back to October 18th.
Okay.
And then the Gord's playing in Ottawa on that day. And then here in Toronto on the 21st, which is the Friday.
Okay.
And then the 22nd, which is the 50th anniversary of Charlie's death, that will be when the CBC airs the special. And we're bringing Charlie's has three surviving sisters who are now, you know, in middle age in their 60s, still live up north, and they're going to be at the show and stuff, and it's going to be pretty amazing. The last 3 years working on this with him has been incredible experience, you know. So yeah, some great times we spent up north as well, kind of doing some research and just getting to know each other. And yeah, it's been a real journey. It's been amazing. You know, it's amazing where comics can take you that you never, anticipate when you're growing up, you know, reading the stuff and wanting to draw Batman or whatever, you know, you never, something like this could come from it is pretty special. So.
Well, that's the thing. And I mean, as you know, as not trivial, but certainly a different way. I, you know, when the NHL was like blown away from Essex County, am I right, back in the day? Did you get some interest from the NHL?
Yeah, I've heard from a few, a couple ex players and stuff who really got into it. So yeah, it's cool, and the CBC really kind of latched onto it. It's
there you go.
Sort of this Canadian literary thing. So it's the Canadian. You know, reading public has been very kind to me.
That's cool. Hey, man. Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And I get to listen to Q comes in Chicago Public Radio. And I'm always fascinated by what's going on up there culturally and everything. And this is such an amazing historic story that, again, has been buried for so long. And congratulations on I'm so glad that he found you and that the two of you guys are able to collaborate
this way.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
It's been cool. It's really cool to see my stuff animated as well. This animation studio here is doing it, and they're literally taking the drawings and kind of turning them into three-dimensional things. It's really wild to see. It's pretty cool.
God, I hope, you know, I really do hope that there's something online or whatever.
It's going to stream, I think, live when it's online, it comes out that night. So yeah, I'll make sure it'll be all over my social media and stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Is there a website now that, and also I was going to ask, can they pre-order the book and album?
Yeah, you can do both. If you go to the website is secretpath.ca. That'll shows a clip of the animated film and gives you all the backstory of this project and all the links to pre-order the book. And there's two versions. There's like the regular book with album, and then there's like a deluxe vinyl version.
Oh, fantastic!
A slipcase with, I did like 10 prints that are three songs that are in there, and the book's in there with it. And I think they're only doing 5,000 of those, so that's a bit more limited, but it's a pretty nice package. Yeah.
Holy cow.
And I drew all the packaging and all that stuff, so it's pretty cool.
Oh my God. And you know, you're not that much younger than me. I mean, you've come from that generation when, you know, albums used to have, beyond the album, so much great, you know, concept art and
yeah, especially for artwork. The album really celebrates it. Yeah, that's another cool thing about the book itself. I drew it in the dimensions of a, you know, 12x12, the
fantastic
dimensions of a vinyl record, knowing that this would probably be the end product. So it's kind of a different format too. It's sort of this weird giant square comics format. It's really neat.
That's terrific, man. Oh man, and for what a wonderful, important thing to be part of. That's great, man. I'm telling
it's been great.
I don't know what little article I read, but immediately I had to you know, contact. There we go. That's
Someone called again.
Yeah, all good. No worry, man. It's okay. No, I was just saying, I don't remember what small article I read about it, and that's why I immediately messaged you and said, oh my God, this sounds incredible. And yeah. So, no, dude, that's, you know, that's great. Honestly, I can't say it enough in terms of, you know, they got the right guy, and it's, you've got that kind of sensitivity in your work that can convey this kind of story. Anyone who's read your stuff can say, yeah, absolutely. Of course, this is the right guy to do it.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. It's been really great. It's been I really think the comics themselves are probably, it's got to be, I think it's probably the best thing I've ever done. So it's completely silent, you know, because it's supposed to be read as you're listening to the music. So
I understand.
It's unique, definitely in format and in style. And yeah, I'm excited for people to see it. Hopefully fans of my other stuff in the US and elsewhere we'll still be able to find it. I know it gets a bit tricky because it's a Canadian publisher and stuff, but it's out there. You can find it if you go to the website.
I don't know if you were aware of when a year or two ago Art Spiegelman was touring with a jazz combo and had discovered a bunch of silent graphic novels that dated back to the late 1800s and really into the 1950s.
Oh, wow.
And it was called.
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, it was called Speechless, and it was great. And I saw it. He's only performed it in a few cities, and he brought it to the University of Chicago, and I saw it there.
Oh, nice.
And yeah,
that sounds cool.
No, and that's the thing. And I mean, you know, I hope that this inspires more collaboration like that in terms of music and comics. Again, you're telling a really important story, but I can also see that this would really be great. I mean, I can't. I remember there was a War of the Worlds. Rock album from the late 70s, and actually I think it was Canadian produced, as I remember.
Oh really?
And it combined, you know, really great science fiction illustration with a musical version of War of the Worlds. And but this,
that's neat.
Yeah, I can't this is great, and I really look forward to seeing all this. secretpath.ca for people who want the website.
You just reminded me of. I remember the one example I can think of comics and music was. Do you remember Tim Truman's Scout from the 80s?
Oh, of course.
There was one issue where he had like a flexi record in from his band.
Oh, I
didn't
know that. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you had a band.
That's pretty
great.
Cool.
Oh my God, that's really cool. Jesus.
I can't remember what issue it is, but I know I have it here somewhere.
Fantastic. Oh my God. There's Tim's another guy I haven't gotten to yet that I got to get.
He's one of my heroes.
Oh yeah. What a great, great creator, man. It's so fun. I've talked to pretty much all those first comic guys except for Tim.
He's awesome. So, I heard we're getting off track, but that's fine. I've read that he is working on like a sequel or follow-up to Scout with his son Ben is writing it.
Oh, so that's cool.
I love Scout. I think it's one of the most underrated comics of the 80s. It's super super huge influence on Sweet Tooth, for sure.
I can see that. That's really cool. And I know he and his son have done other story arcs with Scout.
They did a great book called Hawken as well, him and Ben Truman. That was really kind of went under the radar, but that was a good one too.
That's very, very cool, man. All right, we'll lighten things up now, and we'll talk about some of the other stuff you've got going on. I mentioned with Matt Kent, your Valiant work. Well, and this is an interesting opportunity. You're doing there's something going on where there's going to be a change in a time paradox, which will create an alternate universe version of the Valiant universe where the Soviet Empire is kind of running things.
That's right, the Stalinverse. Yeah,
fantastic.
It's really fun. This is all Matt's concoction. It stems out of his Divinity, which is incredible book.
And big fan.
Even if you don't read superhero comics, but you like sci-fi, check out Divinity.
I think it's
one of the best sci-fi comics I've read forever.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, man, because I'll be honest, a lot of the Valiant stuff just doesn't speak to me, and they've got a lot of great writers and a lot of great artists. But when I heard about the initial Divinity story, I was like, oh, this is great. And I've had Matt on to talk about it. So, and even the Stalinverse thing, I think, is pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I get to do, like, the Soviet – I'm doing Bloodshot, obviously.
Yes.
I'm writing the monthly Bloodshot book, but I'm doing the one-shot, the Soviet
– Cool.
Soviet Bloodshot, which was just a blast.
That's awesome, man. No, that's a lot of fun. Tell me about Bloodshot, because, honestly, this is – I kind of make you guys when you're doing Valiant stuff, it's like, all right, give me the deal on these guys. I did that with Van Lente, and I've done that with Kent. So.
Yeah, well, Bloodshot was a character I had zero interest in at all. It was like
hilarious.
This 90s, like, Punisher kind of, you know, shoot 'em up, ultra-violent action hero character. His whole deal is that he's this guy who, I guess he was some kind of soldier who had a terrible accident and was infused with all these nanites that allow him to, like, heal, and he can't be killed. And
okay.
So it was this kind of character, and I had, like, zero interest in Bloodshot at all. But when Warren Simons approached me about it, but then the more I started thinking about it, you know, the more it started. I always loved the Punisher. You know, I love Garth Ennis's Punisher.
Sure.
I always kind of wanted to do a story sort of like that. You know, that's sort of like a more grounded, gritty crime action kind of thing. And
okay.
I started to see Bloodshot as like a lot of potential to kind of explore that kind of stuff. And also just to comment, use this character almost to comment on itself, you know, or use him as this vehicle to comment on our obsession with violence and guns and all this stuff that kind of is plaguing our society, you know. So you can almost take the character and twist him inside out and use him as a vehicle to kind of comment on the very thing he was created to be, you know. So it became really interesting to me anyway, this kind of Frankenstein kind of character. And I've fallen in love with the character and his world, and you know, I've been writing the book for 24 issues now, and I think I've done a lot of world. The fun thing about Valiant is since it's such a new universe, you know, as opposed to Marvel or DC, who have been around for 75 years or whatever.
Sure.
Valiant's so new that you can still take one of these characters and you can do so much world building with it. You know, it's almost like if you were at Marvel in the 60s, you know, where you could kind of take these concepts and just introduce so much new stuff and
certainly
really build this whole world, you know, and to get to do it with guys like Matt and Josh Dysart and Fred and Rob Vendetti, these are all, you know, friends of mine.
Sure.
So it's fun to sit down in a room with these guys and build a superhero universe with them. And it's so small and contained that we can really have a lot of control and influence on it. So, yeah, but Bloodshot's been really fun. Valiant stuff is it's not as widely read as some of the Marvel and DC stuff, but I think it stands up with anything I've done. You know, it certainly stands up with Green Arrow and Animal Man. Moon Knight is one of the things I'm most proud of. I think I've done a lot of really cool things with it and have a lot of cool stuff planned too moving forward.
That's excellent, man. No, you know, and honestly, Valiant is incredibly kind and sends me trades and issues, and I do have a stack in it, and I do like, you know, I read Time Walker Fred stuff, and I read Matt's Divinity stuff, and it's good to hear, because now I've got several Bloodshot trades, so it gives me
check it out, man. I'm really proud of it.
Well,
I think it's good stuff.
Well, and that's you know, and I know Warren too is a wonderful, he's got a great eye, he's one of those editors,
he's
just
awesome,
he gets it, and he really picks the right people for the right books, and he certainly had
so
that rep at Marvel
with.
So yeah, it's good to see that he's, you know, thriving at Valiant. And every guy that I hear, it's like, oh yeah, Warren got me for this, and I'm like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I remember back when I was doing Essex, you know, and I was at Top Shelf with Rob, or with Rob Venditti and Matt,
okay,
and Nate Powell, and all these guys, and it kind of felt back then like this weird little family that we had, you know, and it almost feels the same way now with Valiant, where it's a lot of the same guys and Warren, and it's just a small tight knit group. It's a real, really fun to work with those guys, and really rewarding, and I love it. Yeah.
Is that your one Valiant book? Are you doing any other Valiant books with
you? I'm just doing the one book for now.
That's cool.
Bloodshot. It focuses on, you know, obviously I got a lot of stuff going on at Marvel.
Well, yeah.
Too, so it's, yeah.
Well, and I was going to ask you earlier too, like, are you doing this because you feel like you got to strike while the iron is hot? I mean, cause you're spinning a lot of plates right now, man.
Yeah, I know. Some of it just happens, you know.
Sure.
A lot of the stuff, like, a lot of the timing is weird, where you might have, there are certain things I've been working on for a long time, but then they don't get announced or start getting published for various reasons. So it's this weird thing now where I have like this bottleneck of tons of projects coming out all at once. But some of the stuff, like, you know, was written a long time ago and
okay,
whatever. But yeah, I do know what you mean. I think I'm kind of reached my peak here. Where
I don't mean it in a bad way, Jeff. I really don't.
No, I do, because it's burning me up.
Well, I understand that too.
Yeah, I kind of, I've stretched myself about as far as I can, I guess. And I kind of know what my comfort zone is. So I probably will start scaling back a bit in the new year and shifting focus a little more to create our own stuff. And then, you know, keeping a nice foothold and doing, you know, some stuff for Marvel and Valiant, but maybe just not quite as much.
Understood. Well, yeah. All right, let's transition to Marvel, because I just had your press conference on with you and Charles talking about Inhumans. Is it XVI or IVX?
It depends which one of us you ask, but I would say it's XVI. No, I'm just kidding. It's it's fun writing with Charles. He's fun. He's a funny guy. He's really we actually another easy collaboration.
Fantastic.
Him and I, you know, and there's sort of this natural division anyway, in that if there's a scene or whatever that's a little more X-Men focused, you know, it's kind of easy for me to do that one, and then he'll do the ones that are a little more humans focused. But so it's easy to kind of split up the issues. But yeah, it's been really easy. Once a week or every 2 weeks, we'll just get on the phone and go through our outlines and kind of break down the issue and split up who's going to write what, and we just kind of go off and do it. And yeah, it's been pretty effortless. It's certainly fun to write one of these big events. You know,
I wanted to know about that. A little bit of it at
DC. You know, I stuff with Geoff Johns on Trinity War and stuff. But this will be kind of the first time where Charles and I are kind of running points on one of these big events. And it's been, you know, it's a ton of work, obviously, and
sure. It's
stressful, but it's really also pretty fun, you know, I got to say, and getting to work with guys like, Aaron Cooter on Death of X, and then Lionel Yu on IVX. You know,
fantastic.
Pretty great artist.
Hell yeah! No, big Cooter fan and Lionel. Absolutely,
that's me
cool.
too.
So yeah, you know, tell me about breaking an event versus breaking your own thing. I mean, give me the differences.
Oh God! Well,
where to
it's
start?
It's just much more of a collaboration where, you know, when you're doing your own thing, you're doing your own thing. So it's just you or you and whatever artist you're working with. And whereas these events,
there's
just a bigger machine, you know? So it's, you know, Charles and I and the editors from both BX and Inhuman offices and Axel and all in a room. So, you know, it's much more of a group effort. Almost, I guess it would be like the difference between sitting down and writing your own screenplay as opposed to like being in a television writer's room,
sure.
You know, where, you know, so it's more the writer's room thing, which was really interesting, you know, and you get all kinds of different perspectives and points of view into these stories, and you can really workshop stuff. And it was interesting. It's different for me. I'm used to sitting out in a room by myself and drawing my own stuff. So being in a boardroom with like 10 people throwing ideas around, it's nice, refreshing change to kind of to do something like that. And yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
That's cool. Excellent. Well, tell me about Moon Knight. What's going on in the world of Mark Spector?
Mark doesn't even know what's going on in the world of Mark Spector. Yeah. It's that book is the most fun I've had. You know, it's, I pitched it to Nick Lowe as basically, yeah, so it'd be Moon Knight and New York City is like half buried in sand and there's giant pyramids. And then, you know, and then there's werewolves on the moon. And he's like, cool. And that was pretty much my editorial discussion that I, you know, and then I was just writing the scripts and kind of doing the craziest shit I could think of. And
that's outstanding.
Yeah, that book's super fun. But I mean, Jordy and Greg Smallwood are such a good team, man. When I first saw Greg's artwork coming back for the first couple issues, I was like just blown away. It reminded me of when I first saw the first few pages Travel Foreman had sent when I was doing Animal Man.
Oh, that's
like,
great. Oh,
shit, this is going to be something a step above. You know, it was Greg is incredible, man. Holy cow, the different styles he's using. And, you know, I would put notes in the script like, this is kind of more like the classic Sienkiewicz, Doug Munch kind of Moon Knight, and then he would kind of channel Bill Sienkiewicz in these certain panels or scenes, and it's like, oh my god, it was just like a dream come true. Yeah, it's been fun playing with different realities and different kind of Mark's different personalities and getting different artists to sort of represent each one. I promise a lot of people are getting a little worried now that I don't have no idea what I'm doing, but I promise it all comes together. It's all done. It's all mapped out, and it really does all come together.
Staying on the book, or is your run winding down? What's going on?
No, it's going to be an extended run. I mean,
okay, cool.
I don't want to say how many issues it is yet, because I don't want to tip my hat to any story stuff, but yeah, it'll be a nice long story. Yeah. It's not a 6-issue or a 10-issue thing. It's longer than that.
Well, and also, unfortunately, you know, you're kind of victim to that, you know, Marvel now, like, all right, we're going with a new number one and things like that. I mean, you've had a couple number ones.
That stuff's out of your control. You know, you just write the story, you write, and then that's all, you know, the marketing department deals with the rest. But I think I don't see Moon Knight relaunching with a new number one. I think
you've already had two.
No, correct? No, it was it was Hawkeye that had the number one.
Excuse me. All right, yeah, Jesus, and I had forgotten about which I loved by the way. Wonderful run on Hawkeye. Yeah. So is that still happening, or did you finish your run?
No, I had run on Hawkeye was done. Yeah, I did the three arcs with Ramon Perez. That was really fun.
But
that was one of those ones where we definitely knew the end when we started it. We knew it was it was more of a finite run.
Okay. You know,
whereas Moon Knight's a bit longer than that. So
that's issue 5 is the most recent, or is 6?
I think 6 came out. I'm really bad at remembering which ones are coming out when. But yeah, I think 6 just came out.
Okay, cool. Because I know I bought 5, so I'm gonna have to go back and grab it. And by the way, I just want to say, because you are absolutely right, Greg Smallwood is amazing, and
Jordy Belair too,
and Jordy absolutely
together.
No. But I mean, I guess Greg in particular, I became aware of him when he was doing Dream Thief with Jai Nitz.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the first time I saw him, and it's like, oh my god, dude. Met him at a couple of concerts. He's like, he's amazing. He's another, like you said, he can channel all these different other styles. When I first saw him, he was like, he reminded me a lot of Chris Somney in a lot of ways. So
yeah, his stuff I feel like it keeps evolving too. Yep. You know, even there was Dream Thief, and then he did a small run on Moon Knight with Brian Wood, which was great.
Right.
But then I feel like the Moon Knight he's doing now is like 10 steps up on that. Even it's just he seems to just keep topping himself and
that's
expanding
cool.
his tricks. You know, he's great.
That's excellent, man. And I was a big fan of that Munch Sienkiewicz stuff that was in back of those black and white Hulk magazines and stuff, in addition to what we got in the regular comic as well. That was totally, like, for me, that's like when the direct market was, I was most aware of the direct market, and you know, books like Moon Knight were the, you know, that was like the special book you couldn't get on the magazine racks. You had to go to
stuff's really cool. It was fun to, sometimes you get these gigs and these characters and you have to go back and read stuff, and it can be a little painful sometimes depending on what who the character is and what era they, you know. But going back and reading Moon Knight was a joy, because you had the Sienkiewicz Munch stuff, which is incredible, you know, so far out of its time and just awesome. And you get to see Bill sort of evolve as an artist throughout that run. You know, there's a lot of rewards in reading that stuff. And then, of course, it's not really hard work to read the Warren Ellis stuff and, you know,
true,
the Bendis stuff, because that stuff was all really good too.
But I was certainly a classic Moon Knight fan as well, and I've always enjoyed everybody that's pretty much worked on the character since. I'm like Father Flanagan with Moon Knight. I don't know a bad Moon Knight. I've never met them. If you know your boys town. So, hey, I've never asked, like, what do you think of Arrow compared to what you did on Green Arrow and stuff?
Well, if I ever watched it, I would tell you.
You still haven't watched it? Okay, no worries.
Nah. Well, you know what? When it was on, it was like I got the writing, the Green Arrow writing job mm-hmm. when it was first starting. Yes. So I thought, I wanted to at least, I didn't want to get too influenced by it. So I just started writing my own stuff before watching it because I didn't want to, you know,
right.
get too pushed in one direction. And then I did watch, I think, the first season after I had written a certain amount of issues and I enjoyed it for what it was. But sure. then I never really followed up on it. To be honest, I don't watch a lot of the superhero TV shows or movies. I don't know. I spend so much of my time thinking about that stuff anyway. When I want to watch TV or movies, I kind of want to watch something else. You know?
I always use the hardware store analogy and saying, yeah, you work all day at a hardware store and at night you dive into a pile of nails. I don't think you want to do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a weird part of me that just, I know the superhero stuff's really good and a lot of people really like the movies and the TV shows and stuff, but I don't know. I love the comics so much. I prefer the comics.
I understand.
I don't like seeing them adapted.
I can appreciate that. Well, and also
I feel protective of them or something.
Oh, that's interesting. But I also can appreciate, like, I know all those years that Tim Seeley was doing Hack Slash, he never watched Buffy because he didn't want to be influenced by.
I can see that too.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. So no, I don't blame you. That's okay. No, you're doing fine, man. You don't need the influence of, you know, they need your influence. You don't need their influence at everything. I think that's fine. And what I always loved about your run in particular, I mean, Sorrentino was such a great artist as well. But
yeah, he's great.
But it really, for me, it felt like those great Mike Grell years. Where we
that's the one Green Arrow thing I really love. So I kind of tried to hook back into it and bring some of that forward again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. No, it was great. And, you know, seriously, that run was one of the bright spots of, I think, the 5 years that DC was kind of wandering in the wilderness, trying to figure itself out.
Thank you.
Oh, truly. Truly. Well, yeah, I felt that way about your Atom stuff and your Superboy stuff as well. It was like, you know, there's a lot of crap out there, but at least Lemire seems to understand these DC heroes. So Frankenstein, I loved Frankenstein's little, story as well in the New 52.
Yeah, that was one. I that's the one book I left too soon, I think, Frankenstein. I could have had some more fun with that one.
I'm sure.
Oh, well.
That's all right. Yeah. Yeah, do your own stuff, man.
Yeah,
it's all right. Yeah, do your own thing. I think it's great. And, hey, if it pays the bills and it makes it easier to work on your stuff by keeping one foot in a DC or a Marvel or a Valiant and stuff, that's fantastic. Because you manage to still get your voice across working with these characters. Obviously, in Valiant, like you said, you're kind of with square one with Bloodshot and everything. But, you know, these other things.
Yeah, it's fun. The truth is I could survive financially and stuff without Marvel or DC now, which is a great place to be. But I don't do it for the paycheck so much now as just that I really love I still really love superheroes and I love writing that stuff. So it's fun to be able to keep doing it, you know?
Well, you're doing a great job, man. Keep it up. That's the thing. I think when you do get to do your creator own stuff, it's your unique voice coming through. It also comes through on your superhero stuff and the love shows through. What a maudlin thing to say. Good Christ.
Thanks.
But you know,
the one Marvel book that we didn't get to talk about, which is Thanos, which I'm writing, and that one's coming out in October, the new Thanos series. Mike Deodato is drawing it.
Wow!
That has been the most fun I've had writing a non-creator-owned book in a while. It's a blast. You know,
so what's your... tell us about your take on Thanos as we introduce
him. I can't. Because the first issue has such a hook at the end that there's no way to even dance around it. So but it's really fun to write a villain and just try to do the most horrible things you can do every month.
Interesting.
And not have to feel bad about it.
Oh, wow.
It's been a blast. But it also just to do a big sci-fi book like that, I feel like in a lot of ways what I'm planning to do and doing with Thanos is almost a companion book to Descender in a lot of ways, the world building. And it's been, feels like similar territory sometimes. So it's been really fun. And Mike's really, I didn't know Mike Deodato before we started working on this, but he's what a great guy he is. Holy, such a nice guy. And his pages look amazing and really, really nice collaborator. He's just such good energy, you know?
And visually, I mean, that's the thing. When you draw your own sci-fi stuff, you see the tropes and everything that's there, but it's your, you know, that kind of homemade kind of feel that your art has.
Sure.
And everything comes through. And it's great now. You got a 180. You know, you got it with Dustin a bit as well. But God, Mike is such a shiny classic.
Yeah.
You real, like, not real. I don't even know. What do you call that style of art? Is it realistic?
I don't know. Mike's actually kind of, when he got the gig, he kind of told me he wanted to change things up a bit. So he's been experimenting a little bit.
Interesting.
He's been really, he told me he's really influenced by Sean Murphy, Al Williamson, and Wally Wood. So that's who he's trying to channel.
That doesn't suck. Wow.
Yeah.
That's very
he's doing some really fun stuff with textures and things I hadn't seen him do before, and his panel arrangements. And yeah, it's pretty cool. So
well, that sounds incredible.
I think it's going to be a super fun book anyway.
Very, very cool. And it's coming out in October.
Yeah, it launches in October.
Excellent. Dude, you're doing good. All right, I'm going to wrap up because I'm going to let you go because you got to get back to making the donuts.
I do. I got to go. I got to go home and make dinner.
Well, there you go. I got to get back to radio, but I'm glad we had an opportunity. That's the truth.
It's always fun, John.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Seriously, and I'm so pleased that everything is working out because you're a great, unique voice for a lot, you know, and a style as far as your writing and your art and everything in comics. And I'm glad that the audience responds and looks forward to these incredible projects that you're doing. So keep it up. And
well, thanks, man. I feel lucky every day that I get to do what I do and people actually buy it and support it. I'm pretty lucky guy, so I can't complain.
Attaboy. Well, let's talk sooner than later, and we'll come back on some of this stuff. But there's a lot to look forward to in October, November, and the months ahead from Jeff Lemire. So thanks for talking, dude.
Thanks, John. We'll talk to you again, man.
That's Jeff Lemire. I know you're reading his books because they're among the best books that are out there right now. Really excited about Gord Downie and his project, Secret Path. Do me a favor. Go to secretpath.ca, and you'll get more information, and you can order the book there. You can order the book also through Amazon CA and Amazon Canada. And what a wonderful cause. And I'm supporting this not only helping them promote it, but also financially as well. I bought the graphic novel. Absolutely. Are you nuts? Man, what a heartbreaking story, but I think a really important issue. And I know that the Prime Minister is very involved. And in fact, he, like I said, I even watched some news videos. And if you check around YouTube, you'll find a lot of Prime Minister Trudeau's comments on the indigenous situation. Vice, that amazing TV show, did a report and also talked very much with Trudeau about what's happening with the indigenous people and everything. So pretty neat. And that's really cool of them. They're good national people. You see, they care about their country. That's awesome. And in the wake of our election and everything here in the States, I always respect that kind of nationalism. So that'll do it for today's Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And more great stuff coming up in October. Man, I'll tell you, I still have panels to share with you from Cincy Comic Con. Most likely, Brian Azzarello is our next guest because Moonshine started today as we're speaking on Wednesday. From Image, his wonderful new series with Eduardo Risso. And we'll talk to Brian and also with Eduardo because they did a couple panels at Cincy Comic Con. I'll share those with you in our next episode of Word Balloon. Brian Azzarello, Eduardo Risso, and Dave Johnson. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope you'll join me for the next episode. Today's episode brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. And more great product from Jeff Lemire from InStock Trades. We mentioned the great Green Arrow run, Volume 6. How about Broken? Him and Andrea Sorrentino. Some of the best Green Arrow stuff in a really, really long time was happening during their run. It's 45% off, $8.24. Jeff wrote a Teen Titans Earth One hardcover, and Terry Dodson did the art. So if you appreciate that Earth One different spin, they've done those great books of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Well, the Teen Titans one was written by Jeff Lemire, drawn by Terry Dodson. 45% off, $12.64. There, of course, was Justice League United, featuring Justice League Canada. Volume 1 is Jeff Lemire and Mike McCone, 45% off, $13.74. Did I mention Hawkeye, All New Hawkeye, Volume 5? I think I did. Ramon Perez and Lemire. 42% off. It's $9.27. You can get volume 2 of Justice League United. the Infinitus saga, and that is Neil Edwards and Lemire, 45% off, $13.74. You can get the deluxe hardcover of, and let's see, what does this collect now? This collects 17 through 34 of the Green Arrow run, Secret Origins number 4, and Future's End number 1. So pretty neat Green Arrow stuff there from Andrea Sorrentino and Jeff Lemire. It's 45% off. It's $27.49. You can get the first volume of Extraordinary X-Men. Volume 1 is Haven. That's Umberto Ramos and Jeff Lemire. And it's 42% off, $9.27. Again, Descender is available to you. The first two volumes, 45% off, $8.24 for Volume 2. And even a better deal on Volume 1. So do yourself a favor. Head to InStockTrades.com. Check out all these great deals. I've been telling you about Jeff Lemire product. There's a whole lot more. Don't forget, if your orders are $50 or more, you receive free shipping. They make it really easy to find books you want at prices you won't believe. InStockTrades.com. Thanks for listening today to Word Balloon. Hope you'll join us again for the next episode. Brian Azzarello from Cincy Comic-Con talking about Moonshine with Eduardo Risso. Also, he, Eduardo, and Dave Johnson look back at the 100 Bullets run. We have great conversations, and I'm proud to bring them to you on the next episode of Word Balloon. Be there. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2016.